quite an honor to have in the studio with us right now, Ryan McCarthy. He's the Undersecretary of the Army. Yes, our Army, the United States
Army.
And it turns out that Ryan is actually originally from the Chicago area, from Glenview. Went to high school at Loyola Academy. And thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on your success, sir.
Thanks for having me.
So the let's talk a little bit about this, because I know that some of your mission here in Chicago has been talking to ROTC programs, and obviously the military is always in the job of recruitment and maintaining the messaging to get young people involved in this. What drew you in? Because when you came out of you went to a military based college, VMI, right?
Yes.
And so what made you want to do what you do?
My father was in the service, as well as my uncles, grandparents. So multiple generations, about six generations of my family, going all the way back to the Civil War, served in the military. So it was always there, sitting in the kitchen and at my grandparents' house off of Devon up on the north side and near Loyola University. So it was a pretty exciting time for us to watch the Ramblers this year.
Oh, yeah. Go Sister Jean, too.
Unbelievable. My grandmother worked in the bookstore there, too, for that matter.
Oh.
For years up in the the Damon Student Center. It's where they used to have the bookstore. It's always been there with my family, and we find that 79% of soldiers on active duty today have family members that have served.
Yeah.
And part of my mission here in Chicago for the past 24 hours, and we head up to Rock Island tomorrow, is engaging the community. You know, the demographics in the country, the national average of youth that are interested in military service is 11%, but Chicago's at 5%.
Wow.
And we you know, I'm pointing the thumb here. We got to do a better job as in the Army to engage the community, make investments, and try to encourage young men and women for service.
There are academies here, ROTC academies, the Chicago Public School System.
Quite a few.
And which are have been very successful. They're, and the kids coming out of there are very impressive.
I was with Mayor Emanuel this morning. We went up to the Phoenix Military Academy, what's that, over on Campbell. It took your breath away. I mean, I wish I had 192 contracts in my hand. There were some outstanding young men and women. And really, you know, Mayor Emanuel's leadership is setting the pace for the country. This is the largest footprint for JROTC in America. They are the program itself builds character and values that will be successful in any pursuit in life. But they're the kind of young men and women that we want. And the Department of Defense invested about $5.5 million into the JROTC programs here in Chicago and the STEM R&D, and we built a weight room up there in Phoenix.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because the military is changing dramatically. And it seems to me that the kinds of things that recruiters are looking for are different than they were two generations ago, certainly during the Vietnam conflict, and then and a generation ago when the first Gulf War was starting. You're looking for STEM, you mentioned, because technology is such an important piece of this. You know, they always joke about, for at least for the Air Force side of it, that, you know, eventually they're just going to want gamers to fly drones, right? But that's really not true. I mean, it's a lovely concept, but the truth is that you're still looking for people who not only have great technical capability, because it's complicated stuff, right? Whatever service you're going into, there's a lot of complicated equipment that people have to get familiar with. But you also need people who are, they're going to be able to take the mental and physical rigor of it.
Yeah, so I was airborne infantry when I was a younger man, and I think that at the end of the day, character and toughness is what we need to look for in every soldier. It's at our foundation. We're a values-based organization. But to your point about the technical expertise, our weapon systems are getting more complex. If you look at the challenges we face in the world, near-peer competitors, China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea have made vast investments in their weapon systems, the military modernization, as well as economic competition. So we do have to push the envelope in getting STEM education into our the curriculum for all of our soldiers and their training.
You do hear from this administration a real pledge to modernize the military, enhance the military in terms of its capabilities, put more money there, but also boost the size of it. And so there must be a recruiting need right now. Is there a push to fill the spots? And what kinds of things do you like to tell people about that, what you offer?
So on both fronts there, and I think we are modernizing the force. We have a robust budget in the 18-19 budget deal. We're very grateful for that. A huge uplift. That was they stroked that deal, you know, just a couple weeks ago, March 22nd, I think it was. The Congress approved that, excuse me. So we have vast investments. We've increased our R&D budget from $9.4 billion to over $10.7 just for this year alone. Mm-hmm. So the investments will be there against key technologies. A lot of our weapon systems are 40 years old. Our major platforms like the Bradley, the Abrams, Patriot missiles.
Right.
But so it's as much as the investment into the weapon systems as it is the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people are the big number, though. That's the biggest part of your budget.
We have, yeah, it's over half between the military personnel and then operations and maintenance. So 470,000 on active duty today, over 1 million between the active guard reserve and so we are a people organization at the end of
it. At the U.S. Army. That's you're talking about close to a million people total.
Yes.
In terms of
just in uniform.
Just in uniform, yeah. Right. And so then maintenance and all the rest of the kinds of things that you guys have to account. And if you've been on any active duty base, there are a lot of civilians mm-hmm. working on those bases that are doing the things that that need to get done as well. And so so in terms of payroll, that's always a big issue. And I think one of the debates I know that is had at the think tank level and even at the Pentagon is do we need as many people now that technology is kind of entering into the warfighter mentality and the battlefield? Mm-hmm. Do we really need as many folks boots on the ground? What's your thought on that?
I'm on the organized training equip side of the business, not on the policy side. This is around setting foreign policy objectives. But we meet the demand. And we live in a very complex and dangerous world. We have over 180,000 troops deployed worldwide in about 140 countries. So, our presence is all over the place. And it's necessary to have the force generation necessary. You got folks forward. You got others training, others coming home and refitting. It's a complex equation that requires a great number of people. So due to the dangers and the complexities we face in the world, we have to continue to grow the force to meet demand.
It's totally a fascinating change here, too, because it used to be seen. I think a lot of people have the old school mentality of the big green machine, just drop a bunch of boots into a place. The World War II model, even Vietnam was kind of fought that way. And it's not like that anymore. You're dropping smaller groups of highly trained, highly effective, efficient troops into situations, into tactical situations, one at a time or two or five or ten at a time, whatever it happens to be in terms of numbers of groups of people. And that seems to be the mode. You still have to have the one issue, and I think this is one of the things as we head toward whatever the Middle East, if there's going to be peace in the Middle East, there we've already been in two occupations in essence, in Iraq and Afghanistan. We may be heading toward a third with allied occupation and try rebuilding efforts. You're going to need, that's where you need more like police activity, right? As opposed to, and perimeter security activity and things like that, as opposed to, that's where a lot of the demand for personnel is going to come from, I would imagine.
It's going to range from responses to hurricanes. We had over 10,000 people just in Puerto Rico last fall, and I traveled down there with a local reporter here from Chicago last fall just to look at recovery efforts. But, we respond to all national objectives.
So my point being that it's a broad range of things.
It's breathtaking what's asked of the U.S. Army, and we always deliver. Mm-hmm. But that's difficult because it requires, the upwards of 150 different skill sets.
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of people. So it's difficult, and we have a lot of reform efforts underway to look at how can we change our business model. So one thing in particular, we're restructuring the Army right now. As For the first time since 1973, we've gone through a comprehensive effort to restructure the business model. And in particular, we're creating an organization called Army Futures Command. So what we're looking there is, how do we innovate the Army, be more effective, more efficient in the way we develop weapon systems in particular.
And that's a technology concept?
And
training, I'm assuming?
The industrial age model that we've been operating under for the last 44 years would just kind of move incrementally through the system across our major commands, which you can think it'd be a long time when you have over 1 million people on active duty. We have 3 major commands today. We're going to move to a fourth, this Army Futures Command, led by a 4-star general. Mm. And so in so doing, we're moving our engineering talent and what I call our requirements community, our operators, bringing them all together under one roof. So this will reduce span time, be more efficient in the utility of our investments, and help us collapse that span time, which is bureaucracy. And it's expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
is there a certain area or a certain skill set the Army is looking for, or would you say there are certain areas you really want to fill?
So, with respect to modernizing the force, which is why we're creating this futures organization, we'll have futures and concepts and what we call combat development, where we can do research and engineering. So, systems engineering is something that the Department of Defense, writ large, not just the Army, has not done well with since the 90s. Mm-hmm. And part of my visit here, I was at the University of Chicago as well as Northwestern.
Yep, go Cats.
Last fall, we restructured the Army Research Lab and opened up a central location. We cut the ribbon down on the south side of the University of Chicago, mm-hmm. the Polsky Center.
Yeah.
And we're developing an ecosystem with the colleges here in the Midwest and really trying to reinvigorate those relationships that has a pretty storied history, starting back down in the 40s down there on the south
sure
side.
Does.
So we had Purdue, we had Purdue and Northwestern and Wisconsin, so they're all there. And earlier today I had lunch with all these folks up at Northwestern, and we were talking about our investments, our partnership. So a lot of that is our communication of our engagement and matching incentives.
And you're dealing there with research and development primarily, right?
Yeah, that was, how do we get this engineering talent and bring it together from academia with the Army Research Network, when it's making the best use, best max utility of our investments, our investment portfolio.
And we're talking to Ryan McCarthy, who's Undersecretary of the Army, and gracing our studio today. And you did mention when you got out of VMI, you went right into the service, and you were one of the early boots on the ground. In what I think we now call the War on Terror, really more than this era, and Jim Mattis was your commanding officer.
He was actually the battle space owner. Mm-hmm. He was the Marine Expeditionary Force commander, and he owned the battle space. That's the first time that I met him. I was a captain in the Ranger Regiment. He was a Brigadier General at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, time flies.
Yes. And look what's happened. When you actually had worked for a previous Secretary of Defense, too, Bob Gates, who's been on this program a couple of times, written some really interesting books over the years about what that was all about. I think 100 years from now, people are going to be looking at that, the story of America's engagement in the Middle East and seeing it refiguring it through the eyes of the people who are actually there and structuring this and fighting the war. And I think it's going to be different when the politics of this leave than when you see what the decisions were made at the time and why the decisions were made at the time. So Jim Mattis, though, right now, obviously, he's sort of the man of the hour here as mm-hmm. people are looking at him for whatever is going to occur, if anything is going to occur in the Middle East. And he's everybody. And I said, so I'm just looking to you to just to pat me on the head and say this is true, but everybody that we've talked to who has known him or worked for him has the ultimate respect for him.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to put into words. He gave me a call back in February of 2017, and he said he wanted to talk to me. He's the Secretary of Defense, and I was in private sector, and you kind of know where that was headed. And had a 40-minute conversation, and he talked about he was trying to build a team, the political appointments. Trying to build a team in the Pentagon, and we had a deal before I broke the plane of the door leaving.
It's
so much of life is the people you spend your time with, you invest your time with, and I trust him with my life. he asked me to be on his team, and it, you know, was over before I stood up. So,
all right.
How cool.
Well, there you go. Local boy makes good.
Yeah.
I think that's the end of this story. Ryan McCarthy, Undersecretary of the Army, grew up in Glenview. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it, sir. It's an honor to have
you. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. We right now have got Kim telling us what's coming up at the top of the hour in the newsroom.